Accession number 28879, Reel 5.
Anyway, my arm was healed up and everything else. Well, not healed up, but it already had a bandage over it still. And I was doing therapy, you know, working my fingers. And I said to the therapist, I said, how do you think, what do you think of this? Oh, he said, she's not really ready yet, he said. I couldn't provide you with A1 yet. Well, then this officer came up. His name again, I can't remember the name. Thompson, he came up to pay me this time, and he said, Sutherland sent his colonel major, no, Captain Sutherland sent his message up, and he's saying that they've got a job on for August or something like that. No, it's for September, I think. And we've got to start training for it now. He said, do you think you can get away? So I talked things over with the officer. I said, he said, I'm not quite ready yet, you know, and I wanted to get into it. I knew I could use it.
Yeah.
So he said the best thing you can do, he said, is hop in the Jeep, to get all your gear, hop in the Jeep and come back with me. He said, you'll avoid all the red tape of being sent back to your unit in different ways, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, he suggested it, so I will. So I just...
So you were in hospital about four... So you must have been in hospital for about 4 or 5 months, were you?
No, not all that long, no. It was... it was in a way, because I came out one time when I had the plaster up. I came out and went back to the Brit again for about 4 or 5 weeks, I think it was. And then the plaster started to irritate and cause sores, so they took me up again. And they did the skin graft, and they took the skin from the inside of the leg. Over it. So it was about getting on for 2 or 3 months, yeah.
Right, and then Mr. Thompson turned up.
Yeah, so, but anyway, then...
You were still keen to get back to...
I went back to Cabrit and met Sutherland there, and we all got organised. And we all went up the canal and off to Beirut then, because in the meantime, the Medway, the one I was on, the depot ship, had left the harbour because the Jerries had come down to Alamein, and she was sunk well outside the harbour.
Right.
So they had to move the submarine base right up to Beirut. So we had to travel all the way up to Beirut then. And there we got aboard this Greek submarine, the Papa Nicholas, and met the two guides and two Greek officers from Sacred Squadron who were going with us. We unloaded and got aboard the Papa Nicholas. It took us about 3 days then. On our way to Rhodes, they told us then what we were going to do.
Right.
But we got on well with the Greeks, you know.
The sacred...
It goes back into Greek history somewhere.
But they became full SAS...
They were.
Troop, weren't they? They were full SAS troop then, weren't they?
There was not like the Belgians and the French took over eventually as well, the SAS.
Right.
But,
so Major Sutherland relied on you quite a bit, didn't he?
Pardon?
Major Sutherland relied on you quite a bit, didn't he?
Well, I was always with him, yes. But
and he seemed to call you back.
This is what made him feel bad. This is probably one reason why he praised me up so much in his reports to the interviews with the writers, you know.
Yeah. Right?
Because he was disappointed because when we got, as I say, we got to Rhodes, we landed in the normal way, and we made our way up the hill, up the mountain, up to the bridge going over the road, and then we...
What were you there to do?
What, two aerodromes.
Two airfields.
Yeah, there's Maritsa.
Have you done an airfield?
You haven't read any of the books, have you, sir?
I've
even a film made of it. Did you tell you that?
Of the roads.
Yeah, the road raid of that, it's called Operation Anglo. And it's quite good because it's no blood and thunder, there's only a bit of shooting towards the end, that was all, but there's no blood and thunder, and it's a very good film, you know. Went down well, now that's Crete, yeah. Rose. And we landed here, just in this little bit of bay here.
Yeah.
And then we had to make our way up here to this bridge here, to the road. And then we made plans for one to go to Maritsa, I thought, yeah, Maritsa aerodrome.
Right.
And the other two, Lagos. Lagos, that was it. Lardas Aerodrome there.
Mm-hmm.
Near Lindas, that was another two aerodromes. Well, this, we were, they were much closer. This, when we got here, after a bit of climbing around, we were pretty tired out and everything else, and the Greek officer went and slipped and hurt himself.
Right.
And he wasn't feeling very well anyway, and he couldn't go on. So he dropped out. I was going with the Sutherland party, you see, originally.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say with Sutherland, but this Greek officer had to back out of the Maritza party, so
yeah.
The reluctant had Sutherland said I was the only one who could speak Italian, and converse with the guides as well, you see, to get them there. So I was transferred over to the Maritza party.
Right.
Sutherland went down to somewhere outside this little village here, Marionum,
mm-hmm.
and they hung up for a couple of days while we went up. I can't obviously make out the route very well, but we followed the road for a while. We had a long road for a while.
Right.
After went to the bridge here.
Yeah.
That was the bridge there. And then made our way up along the road at night, that is.
Mm.
And then across here to the hills. But it's quite, it looked mountainous, it looked really fierce there, but this guide knew the way more or less, you know.
Right.
The first part they didn't know, but the second part he knew the way. And he took us over here to Maritza, up to the cliffs here, and we could see the aerodrome then.
Mm-hmm.
There's the airport there, but the other one was here. This one, that's the new one. That's
right.
But the one, this is the one we went to. Yeah, because we could look down. There's the village of Maritza. When we got to the top of the hills here, we could look right down on the village like a plan, you know.
Right.
Everything moving on in the evening, that was.
Yeah.
And then we went further around this way, still followed the road in a sense, keeping to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't get lost at all until we got to some hills here, more or less overlooking the aerodrome. The evening before,
were the German patrols?
The day before, nobody.
What? Were the German patrols moving about?
Yeah, the German patrols. A couple of dogs there, but from the aerodrome itself, it didn't look much like an aerodrome. You know, it's mostly like an area of ground with a few barrack buildings and Nissen hut type of things here,
right.
This side of it, and the wire fence around as well. You'll find if you read the book, they exaggerate that slightly. It wasn't all that bad, the wire.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we took it in turns going in. It wasn't like the film. You see them going in, putting a bombs on the plane, and afterwards the plane all going up. Well, it wasn't quite like that. I went first when we got there. In fact, as we were going there, we heard somebody coming. We lay down on the grass, and these two drunken Italians came by. They were Italian, because you could tell the way they were muttering and singing. You know?
Yeah.
And as they went by, my hand was flat on the ground. The grass disturbed by the footstep actually came back onto my fingers. So pretty dark anyway. It was a thunderstorm that night anyway, so we were lucky. Anyway, we got up and carried on. We got to the wire, we got to the wire here on this part of the area, on this, this end here. And that was the most remote part.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had prepared our bombs, got them ready, set the time pencils and everything else. They were for, I think it was a two hour delay.
What did they call those bombs again?
Lewis bombs.
Lewis bombs.
They're invented by Lewis himself.
Yeah.
In fact, we helped make them with them anyway. Anyway, we set the bombs, and then Alec said, I think the best plan, he said, is to go one at a time, he said, because there were quite a few Germans about on the left-hand side talking, you know. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning anyway, but there were still them about. So I went towards the hangar then. There were some hangars here.
Yeah.
So I went towards the hangar, went past the cookhouse, and there was a sentry there talking to the cook. So I just carried on, went got into the hangar, and there were three or four different types of Junkers, That's the steep-winged ones. And a couple of light aircraft. A fighter plane, I think, I don't know if it was Italian or German at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was dark anyway, you know. Anyway, with the fighter plane, you put the... it was simple, you just put the bomb on the seat, on the pilot seat, and the petrol tank was right behind. It would just blow back in.
Right.
But with the bigger bomber types, like the Stuka, the petrol was in the wings. Petrol tanks were in the wings.
Yeah.
From the body. So you had to put the bomb on top of the wing. And that was a bit of a job, because you had to play around with the bombs. It's a good job they were Lewis bombs, because you could flatten it slightly and they stayed on. You know?
Right.
This is all the early days of this, mind you, when the bombs are being first used, you know.
Yeah.
So I did about four of them, I think. And then I went to the other end of the hangar, looked out, and there were three or four more planes further over. And then some more on the skyline, about four or five of them lined up. And I got back to Allett, told him what I'd done, and he said, I'll go now. And one of the corporals there said, he said, what am I here for? He said, I'm not going to get another chance, am I? He said, you're here. He said, you keep a sharp lookout. He said, protect us from anything. But anyway, Alec came back. He went to the other end of the hangar. And then the other corporal, Blake Harold, I think it was, he went around the huts again, skirted the huts, and he planted bombs on two or three more over there. When they all went up, it was around about, 7 or 8 altogether. So some of them probably didn't go. So, but anyway, by that time, we did all that, and we had a couple of bombs left. So Alistair said, we'll go up to the canteen there, he said, because there were men talking in the canteen, whether the guards or not. And he left a few outside, and then and he came across some petrol dumps, so we had a couple more, so we put them on then. So they had a surprise. Well, then we started back, with the aerodrome again, we started back through here, it was all still and quiet, past Maritza again, up the hills, and we stopped on Maritza because we dumped some of our gear there, food and everything, with the young guide, that's Georgius. He wasn't very old, he was only about 16, I think, or 17. Up there. And we couldn't find it when we got back. Anyway, we didn't get that. We didn't go right there. We stopped and overlooked the... it was starting to pour rain down and thunder. Thunder and storms and everything, lightning, everything. And then suddenly they went up. Just after about a couple of hours, they started to go up. And of course, that started things. And the young George, he was here waiting, you see, in the woods here, the edge of the woods.
Right.
He heard it all going on. He must have scared him. They'd been waiting all that time. Anyway, he finally got back, and he heard us in among the trees, looking for the bag, and we couldn't find it anywhere. Anyway, we suddenly came up through the trees and saw him, and he rushed to me, put his arms around me. Oh, sergeant! He said, sergeant. He didn't say sergeant. He said sergeant. Well, he's really glad to see me, you know. I've spoken to him most of the time. And he said, where's the baggage? I said, we said, over here. And he pointed it out. No, okay. So then we started back. As we started falling out a bit then, because during the day, and we had to get back for the rendezvous. So we walked at in the daytime, along the fringes of the woods and things like that, where it was safe.
How many of the others? You, Alec,
Alec
Corporal.
Alec, the guide. One guide.
Yeah.
And, Corporal Blake and Corporal, what's he called again now? Forget the other one now. The names are in there, aren't they?
Right.
And there was just Alec, myself, and a corporal and private with the guide, you know. Now we got back, where are we now? We got back all this way, and we were just coming in to here. We passed the bridge again. Just coming through the woods here where we stopped before. It was dawn then. We'd been walking at night. It was dawn. And just going to start the fire up. And this officer just came out on the edge of the woods and said, you're surrounded. He said, keep yourselves up. I had the Tommy gun.
In English, did he say this?
Pardon?
Did he say this in English?
No, he started out in Italian. Yeah.
In Italian, right.
We couldn't see anybody at the time. And then he said just around, and then all these Italians started coming out of the trees through the officer spoke. He's a bit nervous himself with the officer, you know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Hallett was standing right next to me, you know. I had the Tommy gun, and in previous times it was a case of we were being surprised. We just blast off and then make a run for it, you know, and usually got away with it.
Right.
But in this case, he put it very neatly. He said, I think we've had it silent, don't you? There's much of the saying, you know, I don't think there's much point in, if we were more or less worn out anyway.
Yeah.
And it turned out we were surrounded. But whether anyone gave us away, I don't know. But anyway, we copped it then. So anyway, they took us back to...
You said this had happened to you before. They'd found you before. When have they found you before?
Well, that was once in at the brook itself. We were on not exactly a fighting patrol, but it was an aggressive patrol, you know.
Yeah.
And we came up behind we'd gone through the Italian line and come up behind this big sangha.
Right.
And then about three or four Italians came out and said, "On the Alto," straight away, you know. And we didn't know any more about, but we just Gestapo, the German officers arrived on the plane. Mm-hmm. And they were a bit sore because we'd attacked the German aeroplane, the aerodrome, and the Italians had captured us, you see.
Right.
The Italians, we went in singly, one at a time, to this table, and the Italian commandant, was questioning us, you know, various things. It was quite friendly in one sense. It wasn't like you see on the film, you know, that. Mm. But this German Nazi officer, well, we didn't know anything about the Gestapo in those days, didn't know what they were like, you know, we'd heard of them, but nothing serious.
You'd never come across the SS troops before, or anything?
SS troops, yes, I come across SS troops. But we come across them on one of the patrols. They were about the only lot who did any real patrolling. The Germans didn't patrol a lot.
Yeah.
These SS troops did. They were on the El Adam sector. They had a grudge against the Aussies, and they were always patrolling them. And we went on that sector for about a week.
Right.
We come against them there, but just an exchange of fire, that was all.
But anyway,
this Gestapo officer kept on saying, "You shall be shot, you shall be shot." I think it was all the English he knew.
Right.
He said that to every one of us as we went in. We repeated it afterwards, you know. So, well, it was just... But I know I was there, before I went in, the officer said, "How much Italian do you understand?" So I pretended I didn't know that all. I said, I just know enough, you know, to get along, to talk and ask questions and things like that. But they were arguing away there at one time. I don't know what the German was saying, but the commandant said, remembering him saying quite plainly, he said, "They are our prisoners," he said. "We captured them and they'll be treated according to our rules," he said. They're talking about the commander being shot at the time.
Mm.
But then this German Gestapo, he just finished off by saying, "You shall be shot." Again, I think it's all the English he knew. Anyway, we got away with it. We didn't get shot at all. But then they said you're going for trial in Germany.
Uh-huh.
Why did some of our officers were sent for trial there? At one time then, and when they were captured.
Yes.
So we were put on this boat at Rhodes, and went through the Corinth Canal. And across the Straits of Otranto, that's the entrance to the Adriatic, you know.
Yeah.
And we've been up there before on the submarines.
Right.
And the submarines are always there watching the straits.
Yeah.
So the whole crew, everybody, even the women and children that were going, passengers, you know, relatives of the soldiers, I suppose, and things like that, they were all going home. Everybody was on deck, all with their lifeboats on, prisoners and everybody.
Right.
Well, we crossed the Straits of Otranto to Brindisi.
Brindisi, yeah.
Brindisi. That was the first place we went. And then we went to another place and got shaved and washed and everything else, interrogated again.
How many prisoners were just yourselves?
The reason why we finished off in Italy was because we were going to Germany, up through Greece. But when we got to the Piraeus, there was chaos going on there because... The partisans had started on against the Jerry's.
Right.
And railways were being blown up by the partisans and all sorts. So they decided not to send us up through there.
Mm-hmm.
They kept us on the same Italian boat and sent us to Italy. So we were lucky. We got to Brindisi and we were sent on a train. That was a bad journey, you know, cattle trucks and things, all the way up the Adriatic coast, halfway up, and then on another little mountain railway up to the camps in central Italy.
Right.
That's where I ended up then.
And Joe, you were there, so into a prisoner of war camp.
That's where I come up against the the Italians. We were in camp there for a while, and from the camp you could look up onto the hills and see this big villa up on top, about a mile and a half away. Well, then the Jerry's were coming up along the when Italy packed in on the armistice. The Jerry's, we received word that the Jerry's were coming up. The Italians were keeping us there, not by force, but saying that you'd be better off here, you'd be well fed and everything else. And the British have said stay there until they arrive. They're on the way up the coast. Well, then of course we heard the Jerry's were coming up. They'd already taken one camp, and the commandant, the Italian commandant, said, well, we better get out now. He said, to release them all now. Well, then, as soon as he said that, everyone started organising to get out, packing up everything else. And they said the release time would be such and such a time. And when the time came to be released, we all started going out in different ways. And the sentry started opening fire. They got panicked. We hadn't been instructed properly. They started opening fire, so we had to make a break for the side entrance. Paddy and me, who was a friend of mine at the time, make for the side entrance, so we broke out through there and we hopped it. But everyone else got out eventually.
How long were you in the camp?
Not quite about 8 months.
Takes you through the middle of the middle of 43, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, then we made our way up the hills here, and it was dark, you know, we were tired out when we got to, we laid in these bushes here. And when we woke in the morning, we were right in the middle of a vineyard. We woke up, and there was these grapes hanging all over us. So we met a couple of other prisoners at the time, and we didn't know what to do exactly. We had these notes that had been dropped, you know, about staying, so we thought we'll stay around for a while. But then Paddy got hurt. I forget what it was. No, he hurt his arm or something, other than the beginning septic and everything else. I thought, let's try and get it treated somewhere, you know. So I thought I'd take a chance and go to the villa. And I went up to the villa, and Fiamma, you saw these, didn't you?
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah, so Fiamma, that's the one. She opened the door, and she looked a bit startled, you know.
Yeah.
So I just said, could you possibly have some bandage and some ointment from a friend's, he's wounded in the wrist, you know, and in the arm. And she said, yes, by the way, no bother. She came out, said, where is he? By that time, we were coming up towards the peasant's house, and we went into the barn and she fixed it all up.
Right.
And after that, we still hung around there, and we saw them now and again. And then, of course, the Jerry's arrived. And we came up to the peasant's house. The Jerry's were coming up the road with their lorries, starting out. They were shooting across the way as well. You know, they caught up with some prisoners in the farmhouse, didn't they? Shot them.
Right.
And they sent a farmer. Said, "I know a hiding place." He said, "In the woods down here." So that was among the mafia. And he said, "You can come and hide in there." So Paddy and I went there. We stayed there.
Uh huh.
We could see at the top, we see what was going on. The Jerry's came up the road, and so they searched the house. They all asked, they questioned them as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said they'd heard they'd prisoners there. And after a while, they all went off. And yet, strangely enough, they didn't go out for a while. All the lorries disappeared. They'd caught a few prisoners up in the hills as well. All the lorries went off. Everything was quiet again. And we still stayed there for some reason. I don't know why. And just we were about to move, find out what was going on, A motorbike started up just below the villa, among the trees, and went clattering down the road. But as it came out of the main road, we could see it was the German and another one in the cycle. It left it behind.
Yeah, just to see.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got away with that. But anyway, for a while, everything went quiet after that. The Jerrys went. The troops were getting close, you know, to the British troops were getting close.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the rain came, and it stopped them about a month or more.
Yeah.
So we stayed around there. Some of them went off, but they came back and said they couldn't get anywhere, you know, because of the weather. But we stayed around there, and Pamela said she'd like to learn some English, so she brought her books down. She's always with the girl, that is. And,
uh-huh.
And well, you can see, remember, you saw the Eton show.
Yes. They've had some photocopies.
That's right. Fiamma did that afterwards, years afterwards, in the 1980s, when she contacted me again, you know, after her husband died. Where was it? I had a little photograph with me of Filippo. Up there now. There, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me a little photograph of just Filippo, and on the back, there's some words, and the... No, where are they again? Mm. Well, there's another much now, anyway, so... we stayed there until we heard the troops were coming up at Christmas. They even invited us into the house at Christmas. And so the Jerrys came up once more afterwards too. While we were still there in hiding, so
yeah.
They came up and they interviewed the girl's mother. And well, in that brief period of 2 to 3 months, her mother had cancer. Her mother died, and they had to go down to Payload to the barrier.
So you were there hiding during Christmas of 1940.
Christmas until the early spring, yes. And then, of course, the
Christmas 1943.
The Jerrys were coming, getting bold again then, and. The troops on the ride, though, and they were shooting anyone they found, and taking prisoners anyone who was sheltering prisoners.
Yeah.
So we made our way up to the hills with the partisans. Right. We were hidden on the river for a while. We hid on the river, and then there was along the river there. They had little embankments coming out to stop the floods, you know, stop the erosion.
Mm.
And through the embankment, there was big concrete pipes to let the water through to ease it. We slept in those on straw for the time being.
Right.
And then this little Yugoslavian came down one day, loaded down with weapons. And he said, do we want any arms? You know, I said, no, we don't really want arms. You know, he said, but he said the partisan got a bit of help up there, he said. He said, they're attacking trucks and things like that. So he thought, well, right, we'll do what, you know. Anyway, we went up. But it turned out to be just a lot of rubble again, you know, equaling old scores. And one time they attacked a farmhouse and someone, some farmer they didn't like in peacetime or something like that. Anyway, we didn't stay with them, we just left them.
There was communist partisans and...
There was no war. Yeah, communist partisans and rogues.
Yeah.
Prisoners and ex-prisoners, all sorts.
All sorts running around. So can I just to get things straight, Bill, you